All right, we're there. Revelation chapter number 17, and we are looking at, you know, prophecy, how it's a proof of the Bible, and we've started looking here at the apostasy of the last days. And really what we could say right here is we're in Revelation chapter 17. This is the culmination of the apostasy that's happening right now. Okay, this is what it's going to end up being. And again, apostasy is a departure from the faith. Holding to the profession, but departing from the truth of the Word of God. But you hold that profession. Excuse me, this is the culmination of it. This is what it's going to end up being, is what you see here. It's called, in verse 5, Mystery Babylon the Great, the Mother of Harlots, and Abominations of the Earth. And I would say that this Mystery Babylon the Great is, for the most part, I believe it's going to be the Catholic Church. And I it's more than just the Catholic Church, but that's going to be the largest part of it. And what the Catholic Church teaches is Babylonian religion. And it goes back to the Tower of Babel with Nimrod, Semiramis, and then Tammuz, which it's a whole mess that I need to teach on to really have an understanding of that. But that's where all false religion, that's where it all started, really, for the most part. Because if you remember, we could say the first false religion that started was, we could you call it fig leaf religion. Because what did Adam and Eve do? They tried to cover their sin, right? They tried to cover their nakedness after they'd sinned. Okay, that's what they did. So they were trying to make a covering for what they'd done wrong. Okay, they were trying to please God in their own way rather than doing it God's way. And God says, that's not enough. There needs to be a sacrifice. Something needs to die. And he covered them with the coat of an animal, with animal skins. That means for that to happen, that animal had to shed its blood. Okay, he was painting a picture here of, there needs to be a blood sacrifice. Okay, the next instance we see of it, who knows what the next instance we see of man's religion is in the Bible after Adam and Eve, who knows? It's not too far. Cain and Abel. Cain and Abel. What was the difference? What did Cain bring? Isaiah? No. What did Cain offer to God? Right, well, what did he offer, though, specifically? Genesis chapter 4. That's right, the fruit of the ground. What he could do. What he worked for. What did Abel offer? Right, a blood sacrifice, right? Abel offered a blood sacrifice, and God accepted Abel's offering. He didn't accept Cain's offering. Cain got mad about it and ended up killing his brother because of it. But even in that story, you can see God giving Cain another chance. He said, if thou doest well, you know, isn't everything right? Isn't it okay if you do well? He said, go ahead, just fix it, Cain. Just fix it. See, but Cain wanted to come to God on his terms with what he could bring. He says, no, look at all the work that I've done, all the labor I've done. And it was a bloodless sacrifice. It was a bloodless offering. And the Bible tells us in Hebrews, without shedding of blood, there's no remission of sins. None. Blood had to be shed. That's what could, ultimately looking forward to Christ, what could pay our sin debt. And that needed to happen. Okay, so we could say that, yes, you see that false religion even then, but then God did something. Genesis chapter 6, he says the wickedness of man was so bad that his thoughts were only evil continually, so God said, I'm going to destroy them all. It repenteth me that I've made man on the earth, so I'm going to destroy him. And he killed them all. It says, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And Noah was spared, and his wife and his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Okay, so all that was done away with, and you've got these true worshipers of God. I mean, think about it. In the whole world, and I don't know how many people were alive at that time, but only 8 people were saved. That talks about, you know, Jesus said, you know, narrow is the way and straight is the gate that leads to life everlasting, and broad is the way and wide is the gate that leads to destruction, and many there be that go in thereat. Man, whew, that's a picture right there before your face, isn't it? That out of the whole world, only 8? Really? I mean, he preached for 120 years. It says Noah was a preacher of righteousness. And he was preaching for 120 years. And only 8 people wanted to get on board. Only 8 people had the faith to trust. Okay, so God started over. All right, so we look at all false religion. And in Genesis chapter 10, let's just go ahead and go there real quick. Genesis 10:1, now these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Unto them were sons born after the flood. And it just goes through and starts listing the sons. And it says, and the sons of Ham, Cush, and Mizraim, and Phut, and Canaan. And the sons of Cush, Seba, and Havilah, and Sabta, and Rama, and Sabtika. And I have no idea if I'm saying any of these right, but you guys probably don't either, right? Sounds good, doesn't it? Okay. And the sons of Raamah, Sheba, and Dedan. And Cush, get this, this is important right here. And Cush begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty hunter, a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And look at this right here. This is important. The beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calneh in the land of Shinar. That statement in the land of Shinar is important if you compare it with Genesis 11:1. But the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. The Tower of Babel, right? It makes this statement, Cush begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one on earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. Now, Nimrod was not a man that followed after God. He was a man that shook his fist in the face of God. That's who Nimrod was. And we get that because as we go through and we look from right here, what it said about him, he went, the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, and his kingdom goes on and on. Now, what did God say when they got off the boat? What did he tell Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth? You know, he said, be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth. He said, go, you know, fill up the earth. Go fill it up, spread out, go. But what do you see right here? Let me stop right here. I want to recommend 3 books to you if I can. I just recently finished reading this a few days ago. To me, this one right here is going to really... Okay, how many of you have ever heard of The Two Babylons by Alexander Hislop? Okay, this is like a classic here. Okay, it's called The Two Babylons or The Papal Worship. Okay, and what this book does, I would recommend everybody get this book, order this book. This is a great book, but I would say get this book first. Because this book is going to condense and make this one easier to understand in this book. And this book is called Babylon Religion by David W. Daniels. You can get both of these books at chick.com. It's the same place that puts out Chick Tracks. Okay, you can get both of these books there. I would recommend both of these books. If you're going to get any of them, of the 3 books I'm going to recommend, I say get this one first. Because it's illustrated by Jack Chick, and some of the pictures really do make it easier. It's not, I'll show you, like almost every page, it has drawings in it, okay? So it's almost like going through a comic book, but it has a lot of information in it, and it's all referenced with what the sources are that it's coming out of. Okay, so yes, it's like a comic book, but it's got its facts backing it up. But it breaks down some very interesting things. And so it's called Babylon Religion, How a Babylonian Goddess Became the Virgin Mary. That's what it's talking about. Okay, I recommend everybody get this book. The Two Babylons talks about how the Roman Catholicism is Babel worship. And it goes back to the Tower of Babel with Nimrod, his wife Semiramis. And then after he dies, this son that she had, which she says is Nimrod, you know, come back and born now, so you need to worship him, Tammuz. And he's got all kinds of different names throughout history. That's why I say get this book, because it gets confusing, and this book simplifies it to help you understand it. Because I'm going to read here, if we get to it now, from this, and just some of the different names that this group go by. So it's going to be Nimrod, Semiramis, and Tammuz. Okay, and they've got different names in different parts of the world where they're worshipped. So you're going to have that, okay? But I recommend getting these books. Okay, so now going back to this. So Nimrod, he was a mighty man, a mighty hunter before the Lord, okay? Now, again, remember, people lose sight. That's why it's so important. Some people say, you know, the first 11 chapters of Genesis are foundational to the Bible. And I believe it, because if you reject the first 11 chapters, a lot of the rest doesn't make sense. There's no foundation to build on. Jesus Christ is a liar. If you reject a literal creation, a six-day creation, you're making Jesus Christ a liar and all sorts of other things. If you don't believe in the flood and the things that were going on then, the things that it talks about, that there were giants in the earth in those days, and if you want to buy into things like, you know, evolution and that man didn't walk with dinosaurs, then, you know, a lot of the Bible's not going to make sense to you. Parts of it will not make sense. Because it says here, think about this now, I believe that man walked with dinosaurs and dinosaurs at the same time, because I believe the creation account, as it said, you know, it happened there on the sixth day, all these things were made and man was there with them. And then sin happened and all these awful things came into play. But think about it. Now, if everything was a vegetarian and everyone was a vegetarian before the fall, and then you've got all these animals and now all of a sudden there's the fall, and now you've got these flesh-eating, ferocious animals like a Tyrannosaurus rex or a raptor or a lion or a tiger, that's going to be a little bit scary, isn't it? And then now add into that, you've got Genesis 6 and you've got, as it says right here in Genesis 6, verse 4, there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them. The same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. So these giants came about. Why? I mentioned it, I think, this last Sunday morning. They came about because you've got these fallen angels have come in to the daughters of men, and they procreate, and they have children, and you get these giants. That's the only thing that makes sense. The whole, if you remember on Sunday, I was talking about get a reference Bible, a study Bible. But you can't believe everything you read in it. Because, for instance, in this one that I have, at Genesis 6 from Scofield, it talks about what happened there, what they believe the sons of God with the daughters of men are. What Scofield says it is it's the godly line of Seth with the ungodly line of Cain. Okay, that's what he says they are. But last time I checked, when you had a lost person and a saved person have children together, it didn't create giants. Right? That doesn't create giants. But whatever's going on right there in Genesis chapter 6 created giants. Okay, so something different is going on right there. So you've got these giants, you've got all these, you know, flesh-eating animals that are just like ferocious. And now Nimrod comes on the scene and it says he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. So Nimrod comes on the scene. And a lot of people, by the way, think that Nimrod was a giant himself. I don't know if he was or not. A lot of people think he was. The Bible doesn't make that absolutely clear. I wouldn't say he wasn't. But Nimrod comes on the scene. Imagine if you just like, hey, let's go for a walk to the park, family, or whatever. We're going to go visit grandma. And you start walking down the street, and then all these, you know, these ferocious animals come and kill half your family. But then you hear about, oh, there's this guy in his kingdom. If you go to his kingdom, he's killing these animals. We don't have to worry about this stuff here. He's fighting off the giants. There's safety over there. Sounds pretty good. Let's go over there. You see, that's what Nimrod was doing. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. I mean, he was building a name for himself. Wherefore, it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. It's not God saying that. God's saying this is what the people were saying. It is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And get this, the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. So this man starts a kingdom. His kingdom starts in Babel. The beginning of his kingdom was Babel. And it spreads from there. It goes from Babel, it says, in Erech, and Akkad, and Calna, in the land of Shinar. So that's where his kingdom started. So I'm saying all of this false religion that we have today, and it's the world over. Okay, I'm not just saying it's Roman Catholicism, but Roman Catholicism's the biggest one pumping this out, pushing this stuff out, and they're all going to come back. Now remember, we're in Revelation 17, and it's talking about Mystery Babylon, the mother of harlots. She says she's the mother of all these harlots. Where's it all going out? She's going to say, come back. Come on, let's all come back. And When that man of sin's revealed, when the Antichrist is revealed, they're going to say, that's the one we've been looking for. There it is, and they're all going to come running to him. Everyone's going to be deceived. That's why you better know this book. All right, so it says in the land of Shinar. All right, now, Genesis 11:1. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. Now that alone right there is going to make things easier, because anywhere you go, you can understand each other. Okay? It was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east. Get this. So we're getting a preview of what's going on here in Genesis 10:10. Okay? And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Now, the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and some other places, it says, where? In the land of Shinar. So this is where Nimrod's kingdom starts. They went east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them throughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. See, they didn't want to obey God. They did not want to obey God. They wanted to make a name for themselves, and they wanted to stay put instead of going how God told them to go. Now, let's stop here. This book here, this one helps with it, but this one here lays out some of the chronology of who's still alive at this time. Now, the time of Nimrod, you got Seth is still alive. I want to say Seth. Shem is who I'm thinking of. Shem is still alive. If I read that right, I'm going off of memory here. Shem's still alive. That was Noah's son. He's still alive to be a witness to all this stuff that's going on, that's happening. To say, hey, wait a minute. What are you guys doing? You shouldn't be doing that. No, no, no. You see, God's never been without a witness in this earth. He's always had a witness. He's always had a witness. He always will. Elijah thought, oh, I'm the only one. He said, wait a minute. There's 7,000 that haven't bowed the knee to Baal. By the way, Baal's just another name of this same false god we're talking about here that was started here at the Tower of Babel. Okay, so they said, let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. Verse 5, and the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So what did God do? See, you've got a one world government right here. You've got a one world religion right here. And God said, I don't want that. I don't like that. And he scatters it. He says, nah, this isn't going to go. So what does he do? He confounds the languages. And they've got this worship going on of Nimrod, Semiramis, and her son Tammuz, which she says was Nimrod come back. Okay, so this is why you see these pictures of the mother and child, right? Don't we see that everywhere? Go into a Catholic church and you're going to see that picture. But go into India, you'll see the same picture. Go to China, you'll see the same picture. Go to Egypt, you'll see the same picture. Go down to Mexico with the Aztecs, you'll see the same picture. It might be different, but it's going to be a mother and a child. What is it? It's Semiramis and Tammuz. And they go by all sorts of different names, but I'm just telling you, going back to Babylon, that's what it is. It's all Babylonian worship. That's why Alexander Hislop, in this book, The Two Babylons, or The Papal Worship, that's why he called it that, The Two Babylons, because it's one and the same. Satan's just smooth like that, and this book lays that out, how he did it. So that's why I'm saying get all these books, because this one's going to reference this one a lot. It'll help you to have both of these books. Oh, by the way, the other book, I didn't tell you, this one, Dave Hunt, A Woman Rides the Beast. This one deals mostly with Revelation chapter 17 and who is the woman. And he makes a pretty good case that it is Rome, that Babylon is Rome, and I believe the woman's the Roman Catholic Church, but he makes a pretty good case for it. So I would recommend getting this book as well, A Woman Rides the Beast. And I have these here if you want to get the titles down for them. So, God confounds the languages. He says, I'm not for a one-world religion. I'm not for a one-world government. But what do we see happening? The culmination, it's getting back. Satan's been working at it since then, since the Tower of Babel. He's been working to get back to that when he built a one-world religion, one-world government. He's been trying and trying and trying and trying. I mean, think about it. Think back. Look through history and look at how many men have tried to dominate the world throughout history. I mean, they tried to take over the world. They tried to set it up so that they could be in charge. And it hasn't happened. Satan's been working at it. But God says, as we go to Revelation and we look at what's going to happen, we're going there. We're heading there. And I'm telling you right now, apostate Christianity today is helping to set it up, to set up this one world religion. We just need to understand that. So God wasn't for it. So he confounded the languages. He says, and there confound the language that they may not understand one another's speech. And again, just this here in verse 7 of chapter 11 of Genesis, go to let us go down. Who's us? Who's us? What do the Jews and the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Unitarians do with that? Well, that's why we got to change the Bible, because there's nothing we can do with that. Let us. Us who? It's just you, God. You're the only one up there. Right? The Trinity. That's right. God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit, let us go down. The Lord came down to see the city. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one. The Lord who? It's talking about Jehovah. Jehovah went down. And Jehovah said, go to, let us go down. What? Huh? Go figure that out. The only way you can figure that out is Trinity. That's it. That's the only way. So that they may not understand one another's speech. So verse 8, so the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. All right, so they've all got this false worship. They've got this false worship of Nimrod, Semiramis, and Tammuz. And this is the worship they're doing. They're building this Tower to Babel so they can just forget about God. We're going to do it our way. And then God goes down. He sees what's going on. Obviously, he knows what's going on, but God's giving us a picture. He says, God says, I'm right there in the midst of this false religion. That's what God's omnipotent, omniscient. He's omnipresent. He's all of those things. He's everywhere all the time. So it's not that God needed to actually physically go down there, but what's he saying? He's saying, I'm going down because I'm right there in the midst of false religion. I'm seeing it. I'm witnessing all of it. So he goes down and he confounds the language. Now, at one point, they all understood the same language. They're all under the same false worship. And now God confounds the language. So what are we naturally going to do? You're going to go looking for people that speak the same language as you. And you're going to say, we got to team up. Because we know what we're saying. That's what's going to happen. So everyone that speaks these different languages, they're going to get together and they're going to go off and they're going to build their own society somewhere. And that's what you see, the spread of this same false religion. You can see it the world over. It's all over the world. It's all over the world. It's human sacrifice, satanic witchcraft, not to mention that devils are going to be talking to people, speaking to people, giving them all these false visions and everything. You know, the Bible talks about when you're worshiping an idol, it's a devil. There's a devil behind that. There's a devil behind that idol that someone's worshiping. A true devil is right there behind it. So that's what's going on here. They've spread this thing all over the world, and that's where it's at. It's gone just as far as can be. So that's just kind of the... I can hopefully one day I'll get more into this, teach us more on Nimrod and the Tower of Babel. But it's just, he goes on to say, therefore is the name of it called Babel. Okay, and it was in the land of Shinar. Guess what? That's the same place that Babylon was. Okay, with King Nebuchadnezzar. The land of Shinar, that's where it was at. Okay, so back to Revelation chapter 17, if we would. Now, I'll just say I'm not 100% convinced that Rome is the city, but the most compelling evidence I've seen for what is going to be this mystery, Babylon the Great, it seems like it's Rome, but I'm not 100% convinced. And I'll just tell you, I don't know what it is. That's why I'm studying this out. I still don't know. But Rome is pretty convincing. So a lot of people think that Rome's going to be the headquarters of this last stand against God, this last one world religion. It says, verse 3, Revelation 17, "So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns." So John gets carried away, it says, in the spirit. He's carried away in the spirit. What does that mean? Let's look at some examples of when this has happened. Go to 2 Kings 6, verse 15. Second Kings 6:15, "And when the servant of the man of God," this is the servant of Elisha, "was risen early and gone forth, behold, an host compassed the city, both with horses and chariots. And his servant said unto him, Alas, my master, how shall we do?" So they're surrounded. The city they're in is surrounded by horses and chariots. There's an army surrounding the city that they're in. "And he answered, Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them." So Elisha wasn't worried because he says, hey, we've got more on our side than they do on their side. Verse 17, "And Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha." What did he get? He got spiritual eyes. He was able to see into what we could say is the spirit world, and realizing that there was a great host around them. It says, "The eyes of the young man, he opened the eyes of him, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha." Elisha was protected. God was protecting his man. Guess what? God still does that today. God will still protect us today. I mean, you look at Jesus, and I know none of us are Jesus, but look at him when he was surrounded by a mob, and it says he went right through the middle of them, and they didn't get him when they wanted to get him and throw him over the cliffside and kill him. They couldn't get him. Why? God still protects people like that. How do you have examples of martyrs in history being thrown to the lions and the lions not touching them? God didn't always do that. Sometimes the lions ate those Christians. But there was times when he'd protect them. So the servant's eyes were open. He was able to see spiritually. That's what's going on with John right here. "So he carried me away in the spirit." Now this one, you're going to see him getting carried away. Go to Ezekiel chapter 8. Ezekiel chapter number 8. Oh man. This is good right here. All right. Ezekiel 8:1. "And it came to pass in the sixth year, in the sixth month, in the fifth day of the month, as I sat in mine house, and the elders of Judah sat before me, that the hand of the Lord God there fell there upon me. Then I beheld, and lo, a likeness as the appearance of fire from the appearance of his loins even downward, fire from his loins even upward as the appearance of brightness, as the color of amber. And he put forth the form of a hand, and took me by a lock of mine head, and the Spirit lifted me up between the earth and the heaven, and brought me in the visions of God to Jerusalem, to the door of the inner gate that looketh toward the north, where was the seat of the image of jealousy, which provoketh to jealousy." So what happens? He's given some spiritual eyesight. God picks him up by his head, grabs him by his hair, picks him up and says, "Let's go, Ezekiel, I got something I need to show you." He's there in Babylon. They've been taken captive. He yanks him up. "Come on, let's go. I'm going to show you something. Let's go back. Let me give you a little reason why you're here in Babylon. Let's go look at what's going on in Jerusalem." And he takes him to Jerusalem, to the temple, and he shows him some things. Now, just real quickly, to fit in with what I was telling you earlier about Babylon religion, okay? Look, God's never for the mixing of truth with error, truth with true worship with false worship. God is never for that, the blending of that. You can see it all throughout the Bible, okay? And here's what we're going to see. Ezekiel gets this vision. God takes him to Jerusalem to witness what's going on, okay? And I encourage you, not right now, but tonight, read through Ezekiel chapter 8, and you're going to say, wow, That's what was going on. We're going to take a snapshot of it here. Verse 13, Ezekiel 8:13. He said also unto me, turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations than that they do. Then he brought me to the door of the gate of the Lord's house, which was toward the north. And behold, there sat women weeping for Tammuz. There he is. There you see it, that false worship. Now these are Jews doing this. It's supposed to be God's people doing this. By the way, you go to Jeremiah. I forgot the reference. I didn't write it down. But if you look in Jeremiah, you can see them worshiping the Queen of Heaven. In Jeremiah. Okay? If you have a concordance, just look up Queen of Heaven. Most of us have an app on our phone. If you just type in Queen of Heaven, it'll pull that up for you. But there were the women weeping for Tammuz, okay? Again, Nimrod, Semiramis, Tammuz, the son. Supposed to be, you know, Nimrod, you know, come back to life is who Tammuz is supposed to be. Verse 15, then said he unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations than these. And he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar. So where is he at? He's at the Lord's house. This is the temple now. So at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, so where they sacrifice to the Lord, were about 5 and 20 men. So you got 25 men there. Get this, the way God words this on purpose, with their backs toward the temple of the Lord, and their faces toward the east. Why toward the east? And they worship the sun toward the east. It's sun worship. It's sun worship. Okay. How many of you have ever seen the what they call the Eucharist? You ever seen it before the priest breaks it? It's in the shape of a circle. It's sun worship. Nothing's changed. I'm telling you, none of it has changed. It's still worshiping the S-U-N, not the S-O-N. Because the Jesus that the Catholic Church worships or preaches is not the Jesus of the Bible. It's another Christ. It's another gospel. It's sun worship. That's what it is. It's in the shape of a sun. Okay, and that's what God says was going on right here with his people. Now remember, apostasy is holding to the profession but departing from the truth of it. You got the Jews doing the same thing. They've apostatized. We're still Jews, but they're worshiping every manner of beast that's in there as you read through what Ezekiel's being shown. And he says, oh, there's greater abominations than these. He goes out, he sees the women worshiping Tammuz. There's greater abominations than these. He sees the men with their backs to the temple. Basically, they've forsaken God. We've turned our backs on God, and they're worshiping the sun. This is what he's showing them. But we're still Jews. Oh, we still love Jehovah. You're getting the same thing today. So many people are saying, oh, we still love Jesus. We're just going to worship him how we want. We're going to mix the holy and the profane, but we still love Jesus. We're just going to worship the sun, but we still love Jesus. You say, they're not actually worshiping the sun. They're not worshiping the Son of God, I can tell you that much. And that's what it is. It's Babylonian religion all the way back to the Tower of Babel. It's the two Babylons. But this Ezekiel was taken in this vision. He had spiritual eyes. He was able to see. John said the same thing. He carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. If we look in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12. Here in the New Testament, just talking about the spiritual warfare that we're in. And we need to not lose sight of this. It's easy to lose sight of it because we live in the here and now. And we forget that there's an actual spiritual battle going on. It's easy to lose sight of that. It'll help remind you of it as you go out to share the gospel with people. And you're out there and you're talking with them and you see how hateful people can be towards the gospel of Jesus Christ. And you realize there really is a spiritual battle going on. There really is. When you walk into maybe some neighborhoods or you leave a neighborhood and you just feel like, man, there's spiritual oppression here. Okay, I've gone into Old Westgate before and we were knocking doors in there and felt that. And I mean, had people like physically coming after me to attack me and other things like that. I mean, you feel it when you're out there doing it. You can feel it and you realize that's what's going on. Ephesians 6:12 here. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood. The flesh and blood's what we see before us. That's why God's reminding us, hey, it's not that person. We need that. That person needs to get saved. That person's a soul. That person's a never dying soul. You're not wrestling against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. That's who we wrestle against. And let me say, though, that this spiritual wickedness in high places, it's going to use men. It will. And we need to understand that. Yeah, we preach the gospel to them, but some of those people that Paul preached the gospel to, I don't know if he ever got to preach the gospel to Nero. Maybe he stood before Caesar. But Nero had him killed. I believe it was Nero, if I'm not mistaken there. Nero's the one that had him beheaded. Whoever Caesar was at the time had him beheaded. I think it was Nero. So don't lose sight that we're in a spiritual battle. It's not against flesh and blood. So it says, he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. And I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast. And I know I've already hit on this. But it's interesting that this mystery Babylon, this false religion, it's God terms it a woman. I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, and it's Semiramis. But it's a woman sitting on this beast. You know, women are always used to lead men astray. You've got Adam, Samson, Ahab, Solomon. You know, I mean, Jezebel's talked about in here. You know, to the letters to the churches, thou sufferest that woman Jezebel to teach. I mean, Jezebel wasn't a good woman. She led Ahab's at fault too, but she led him to do some evil, wicked things. All of Solomon's wives. I mean, God's painting a picture for us to see what's going on here. And by the way, ladies, that should tell us the influence and the power that you have. That you can lead your husband astray. You absolutely have that power to do that. You can. So it says, I was taken away, I was carried in the spirit into the wilderness. And I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of names of blasphemy. And as I looked up scarlet, it was red with a tinge of orange. And you've got, you know, you look at it and you think, you've got the communist Chinese flag and the communist Russian flag were scarlet-colored. I'm just saying, I don't know if there's necessarily a link, but you can see that. Why would they pick that color? I don't know. I'm just saying. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, upon a scarlet-colored beast full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. Now, it says she sat upon a beast. If you go back to Daniel, in Daniel chapter 2, see, we're letting the Bible define the Bible for us. And a beast, and I'm going to get more in depth in this study on the beasts, because I'm looking at, it's not going to be yet, because I'm breaking them down and looking at them and seeing the similarities and the differences. But between the beasts that are mentioned in the book of Revelation in regards to the Antichrist and the false prophet, and this beast mentioned here in Revelation chapter 17, and I'll bring that to us once I'm done with that study about these beasts. But let me just say, in Daniel chapter 2, a beast is described, or governments are described as a beast. Okay, if you remember, I think it's Daniel 2, maybe Daniel 7, I might be mixing them up. But you go over there and those visions that they had, it was these beasts. And you know, one was like a leopard, right? One was like a lion, like a bear. You know, and you had these different beasts. And then it describes the last one, it's like a beast I've never seen. I mean, this thing was ferocious, but it's a beast. And what's he describing? He's describing these different governments. Okay, and I like what James Beller said. He's a Baptist historian. He died a couple years ago. But he said, you know, government's a beast and it needs to be chained. You can't control a beast. You can't really tame a beast. I mean, I remember back Siegfried and Roy, what they tried to tame those tigers, right? And I don't know which one of them it was. It was like 10 or 15 years ago. But man, that lion or that tiger just snapped on him once, just bit him around his neck. And that was it, and like dragged him off stage. He didn't even like go at him. From my understanding of all the reports I read, I mean, he just like bit down on him and just yanked him off stage and pulled him. And he was all messed up from that. They tried to tame a beast. You can't tame a beast. The only thing you can do, you can chain a beast. You either kill a beast or you chain a beast. Okay, and the Bible described government as a beast, and the only thing we can do with a government is chain it. Now, in where we live here, what's the chain for this beast we know as America? Who knows what the chain is here? What does a chain do? If I say you got a dog, a ferocious dog. What does the chain do if you put that dog on a chain? Bam, there we go, the Constitution. Because what does a chain do? It limits how far that beast can go, right? That's what the Constitution does. It limits how far this beast, America, can go. Because if you've studied any bit of government, you realize they always want more power and more power and more power and more power. Give me more, give me more, give me more, give me more. That's every government that's ever existed wants more power. I mean, we just saw there in Genesis chapter 10, Nimrod's his kingdom started in Babel. And then it went to Erech and Akkad and Calneh and all these others. It just kept going. Give me more. Give me more. I want more power. And that's the same thing government still wants today. So you got to limit a beast. And well, thank God we have the Constitution to limit this beast, although it's being trampled on left and right. But that's for another sermon. So I'm just saying that as you look here at this scarlet-colored beast this woman is sitting on, it's described as a beast. And a beast needs to be chained, but a beast is also described as a government in the Bible. And it says this beast, this scarlet colored beast, is full of names of blasphemy. So this beast wants to blaspheme God's name. It's got names of blasphemy. All the different ways it can blaspheme God. And how are so many ways that as we're looking at what this is, and it's this one world religion here, and how could it blaspheme God by all these different ways of saying that, hey, this is the true God. This is the true God. No, this is the true God. This is the true God. And it's all really the same thing. It's all going back to the Tower of Babel. But that's how it could be filled with names of blasphemy. And it had 7 heads and 10 horns. 7 heads and 10 horns. Many people think Rome's going to be the headquarters, and they say, well, the 7 heads are 7 mountains. Well, let's look at verse 9, Revelation 17. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. So, amen, I want some wisdom. So what is the mind that has wisdom? The 7 heads are 7 mountains. It tells us plain as day, the 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman sitteth. And most people say, well, John's looking at this, he sees this harlot, this great whore, sitting upon 7 mountains, and most people identify that with the city of Rome. They say, and it's known as this, the city on 7 hills. I mean, and it fits, it makes sense. Okay, but here's what it says. I don't know that it's just saying, this is why I say I'm not 100% sold that it's Rome. It could be, but I'm not 100% sold that this city is Rome. It very well could be. But here it says, the 7 heads are 7 mountains. Now, mountains are also described as kingdoms. So, it could still be Rome. And the Roman Catholicism definitely could be the head of 7 kingdoms. By far, it's been in the past. And Rome's spread is worldwide. It absolutely is. Worldwide, so it very well could be. But let me show you where the Bible describes mountains as kingdoms. Again, just we're looking here, the 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman sitteth. So the woman sits on these 7 mountains. Here's what it says, though. Verse 18, and the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. So this city reigns over the kings of the earth. And the woman is that great city. So God's telling us in His Word, this woman that I saw riding this beast He says it is that great city. So whatever city we're talking about, and likely I believe it is Rome, I'm not 100% sold on it, but it likely is, this woman is that great city, whatever city it may be. Okay, and so she's sitting on this beast with seven heads and 10 horns, and it says the seven heads are seven mountains. So we're going to look on which the woman sitteth. So the woman, it appears if these are kingdoms, that the woman's sitting over these kingdoms. I mean, if you're sitting on them, you're the top, right? You're the one in charge. And that's where this woman's at. So I just looked at the time, and I'm going to stop right there, okay? We'll pick this up next week. We'll look at how these mountains can be kingdoms, okay?